Osher, Tao, The Three Treasures, Volume 2, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osher Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
The first question. Sometimes you call us you fools, and sometimes you call us you Buddhas. Are fools and Buddhas the same to you? They are not same to me, but they both are meeting in you right now, shaking hands within you. Your past is the fool. Your future is the Buddha. And this moment, they both are within you. Buddha is your destiny. Fool is your reality. Something is actual in you and something is potential. When I call your actual, I call you the fools. When I call your potential, I call you the Buddhas. They are not the same. But they can exist in the same person. In fact, the fool is nothing but Buddha confused. Buddha is nothing but the fool integrated, rooted, centered. The fool can become the Buddha. The possibility is there. Every arrangement is needed. Nothing is lacking, just a rearrangement is needed. You have all that is needed within you, but a deep, disarranged state, a chaos, a crowd of noises. The harmony has not happened. The crowd of noises are called the fool. And when the crowd of noises has disappeared, and the notes, different and even opposite, have fallen into a deep pattern, the chaos has become a cosmos, the disorder a order. The crowd is no more there, but only one exists. The harmony has happened. You have become a Buddha. The fool and the Buddha are not same. They are two phases of your growth. The fool is the lowest rung of the ladder, and the Buddha is the highest rung of the ladder. The ladder is the same, but the dimensions are totally different. And unless you become aware of the fool, you will never become a Buddha. In India, we have a very parallel terms for both. The fool is called the Buddhu. And the enlightened man is called the Buddha. The Buddhu, the word Buddhu comes from Buddha himself. They have the same roots. A Buddhu is an inverted Buddha, standing on his head. A Buddha is one who has come back home. Sometimes I call you fools, to make you aware of your actuality. And immediately I contradict myself and I call you Buddhas, because you may not get identified. You may get identified with the actuality. No, you are a potential being. You have to grow. You have to become that which in the innermost core of your being you are already. Your center is the Buddha, your periphery the fool. And I have to talk to both. The fool has to be persuaded to go. The Buddha has to be persuaded to come. So when I call you fools, don't get hurt. When I call you Buddhas, don't get high. When I call you the fools, remember that I also call you the Buddha. And when I call you the Buddha, never forget that I also call you the fool. Between these two remembrances, something will crystallize within you. The second question, as I watch my thoughts and feelings, I'm left with a sense of wonder. I wonder where they come from and where they go. It is beautiful to be filled with the sense of wonder, but to remain alert, because immediately you will lose it. If you start thinking from where they come and where they go, the sense of wonder is already lost. To remain with the sense of wonder without allowing thinking to enter in is what meditation is all about. Jesus says again and again, those who are like children, only they will be able to enter into the kingdom of my God. What he means like children, he means the sense of wonder. Children remain with the sense of wonder. Remember the word remain. They don't move from it. They move from one wonder to another. But they remain with the sense of wonder. Your mind distorts wonder immediately. A single fragment of movement, you were wondering, and next moment the thinking has entered. You have started to think from where these thoughts come. Where they go, now there is no sense of wonder. Questions kill the sense of wonder. Because questions are already on the way towards answers. A question is an arrow. The target is the answer. And if you can receive the answer, that will be the death of wonder. If you question, you have already moved towards the answer. If you get the answer, the wonder is lost. That's why the more humanity becomes trained and disciplined into scientific answers, the sense of wonder is lost. In fact, to find a man of wonder now is almost impossible. Even if you think that you are wondering, it may be that you are thinking that you are wondering. The more possibility is that, that you think about the wonder also. The sense of wonder is a totally different dimension. It has a totally different quality. The sense of wonder is to remain with a wondering eye, a wondering heart, with no questions arising. The flower is there, the butterfly is there, the trees are there, the clouds move, the whole world is wonderful. Only you have lost the sense of wonder. You just look with the eyes absolutely silent, with no questions roaming inside the mind. That means you are not seeking the answer. If you are seeking the answer, what you are doing? You are trying to kill the sense of wonder. You are not at ease with wonder. That is the meaning of a question. You would like to know. From wonder arises two possibilities. One is a philosophy. Another is of religion. If the wonder becomes a questioning, you move into the dimension of philosophy. And then you will be lost, because it reaches nowhere. It simply destroys you. One question will lead to one answer. One answer will lead you to 1,000 questions, and so on and so forth. And the more you question and the more answers you have, the more divided and fragmentary you become. The one is lost, the one becomes many. And from the same point goes another path, that is of religion. You remain with the sense of wonder, you don't inquire. You don't turn and convert the energy of wonder into a question. You allow the wonder to be there. You are not at unease with wonder, you are absolutely at home with it. You remain with it. The wonder becomes your friend, your companion. You move with it. You sleep with it. You open your eyes in the morning and the wonder is there. You close your eyes in the night and the wonder is there. You breathe in and you breathe wonder. And you breathe out and you breathe out wonder. It becomes your whole being. Then you are a religious man. A religious man is one who lives with wonder, who is at home with wonder, who is not in any hurry to destroy it. That's why he comes everywhere to know, not answers, but the mystery. The mystery is not an answer. When you come face to face with the mystery, you come only when you have stopped questioning. Wonder leads to mystery. The sense of wonder grows and grows and grows, and the whole life becomes a mysterious romance. If you want a religious term for it, then it is a God. If you are not in good terms with the term God, forget about it. The mystery, that will do, because God is not a person. God is a mystery that cannot be solved. Something which you can be in. You can know it in a certain sense, in a totally diametrically opposite sense than ordinary knowledge. Your heart can know it, you can love it, and through love you can know it, but not through questioning. You live in it, and you allow it to live in you. Then everything is mysterious. Even the leaves of grass are mysterious. Everywhere is the signature of mystery. You cannot move without coming across God. Then you don't ask where God is. then you don't ask what God is. You know. Remain with the sense of wonder, difficult, almost impossible, because your mind has been trained to inquire, to question. It is like an itch. You cannot remain with it. You would like to scratch. But if you try, start with itching. Someday you find that your feet is itching. Don't scratch it. Just wait. Remain with the itch. How long it can persist? By and by, it subsides, dissolves, and leaves no marks, no scars behind. Remain with the sense of wonder. If you can remain, a deep patience is needed. Because the whole mind will feel restless and will say, ask, inquire, why this wonder, from where it comes, to where it goes, how it is, why it is. 1,000 questions will arise, but you remain with the sense of wonder. You don't allow these questions to disturb you. Even if they are there, remain indifferent to them. You be attentive to the sense of the wonders and non-attentive to the questions. Soon you will see the sense of wonder has disappeared into a sense of mystery. The sense of wonder is just like a small wave, and the sense of mystery is oceanic. It is the whole ocean. The wave disappears, subsides. With the sense of wonder, you are there. When the sense of wonder subsides into mystery, you are also no more there. Only an oceanic feeling, a oneness with totality. The separateness has disappeared. This is beautiful. The questioner says, as I watch my thoughts and feelings, I am left with a sense of wonder. Remain. Remain with it. Make it a constant companion. There is no better friend in the world to be found. There is no greater guide to be found. Wonder leads into mystery. Wonder is the door of the mystery, and the mystery leads you to the infinite, to the divine, to God, or you name it. But don't start thinking immediately. I know it is arduous, but I also know it can be done. I have done it, so I know both. It is arduous, it is almost impossible. You struggle, and again the questioning comes, and you forget. And you are so fast asleep that to remember a certain thing is very difficult. Just the other night I was telling a Sufi story. A great king who has been successful in all the ways of the life finally started feeling frustrated. As it happens, it is natural. When you have succeeded in everything, suddenly you feel that you have failed. Because when you were not a successful man, there was a certain hope that when you succeed, everything will be okay. Everything will be beautiful. But when you succeed completely, you fail absolutely. Because now there is no hope. You become hopeless. Everything that you wanted is there. But something within you remains unfulfilled. Now what to do with this unfulfillment? A man who is a failure can hope that someday when he succeeds, then this constant emptiness, this hollowness within will be fulfilled. He can hope, he can dream. A poor man can hope, a poor man can dream, but for a rich man, all dreams are fulfilled. He becomes hopeless. The king was feeling very frustrated, as only kings can feel. That's why I say nothing fails like success. It fails absolutely. He started searching. He came across a Sufi master. He went to see him and he said, I am ready to do anything. And you must know about me that I am a man who has never been a failure in anything. Whatsoever I have done it. And I have succeeded. The Sufi said, you may have succeeded in the world, because that very success proves that you may not succeed here, because different laws apply to the world about which you are inquiring. A man succeeds in the world if he forgets himself completely. That is the rule. A politician succeeds if he forgets himself completely. Then you cannot compete with that man. He is almost mad and obsessive. He succeeds. A man succeeds in getting riches if he is completely mad, obsessed, neurotic. You cannot compete with a neurotic man. If you have any sense left, you will not be able to succeed in the world. In the market, only madness succeeds. One has to forget oneself completely. That is the rule, the law. The Sufi said, but here, in our world, just the opposite is applicable. One has to remember oneself. The king laughed. He said, whatsoever the rule, I have never failed anything. You say and I will do. The Sufi said, okay, then this is the examination. You pass. Just 5 minutes are needed. If for 5 minutes you can remember a certain thing I will say to you, only for 5 minutes you become my disciple. The king said, what is to be done? The Sufi said, whatsoever I say for these coming 5 minutes, you have to say, yes sir, I believe in you. The king said, okay, start. The fakir said, that I am the greatest man in the world. A little suspicion arose in the mind of the king, but he said outwardly, yes sir, I believe. Then the fakir said, when you were born, I was present there. This was even more doubtful, because the king was older than the fakir. The fakir was a young man. Now it was certain that he is lying. But he still tried to remember. It was hard. Now, he was losing the track. But still he said, yes sir, I believe you. Then the fakir said, and your father was a beggar. And the king forgot completely. And he said, you liar. I don't believe a single thing you are saying. 5 minutes. Too long, it was only 1 minute. And the fakir said, you have forgotten. You couldn't remember even for 5 minutes. Remembrance is difficult, I know. Even for a single minute. But if you can remember even for a single minute, it pays tremendously. So when you next time feel the sense of wonder, remain with it. Retain it. It will be difficult. But even for a single minute you can retain it, it will give you much. A deep silence will surround you. And by, the more you taste, the more you allow it to happen, the more possibilities will open. A day comes when the sense of wonder dissolves into mystery. With that sense of wonder, you also dissolve. Yes, Jesus is right. Only children, those who have the sense of wonder, childlike people, only they will be able to enter into the kingdom of God. There will be temptation to think. Your mind would like to reduce your wonder into thinking. Resist that temptation. If you can do it, you have the key. The third question, you say, we have to come back again and again until we understand. But if there is no I, who comes back? A metaphysical question. A very logical question. But if you become a little existential, the question dissolves. If you can be here without the I, why you can't be in other lives without the I? If you can exist for 70 years without an I, ego, why can't you exist for many lives? What is the problem? The problem arises in the mind that without the I, when the body dies, who will go to enter into another womb? Just a cluster of thoughts, nothing else. Thoughts are things. Thoughts are not nothings. Your being is a non-being, and thoughts are material, they are things. That's why thoughts can be recorded, they are things. Thoughts can be read, they are things. Even if you have not asserted a thought, it can be read from the outside. It is a thing inside your head, alive, substantial. A thought is a thing. The cluster of thoughts is the ego. When you die, just a cluster of thoughts is released. And that cluster of thoughts and desires and emotions and everything that you have done and thought that you have done and the dreams and the hopes and the frustrations, a cluster. That cluster moves into another womb. This cluster has a center. That center is the ego. If you want not to be born again, you will have to know while alive in this life that the cluster of thoughts is not a one phenomena, it is just a crowd. It has no center in it. You will have to know atomic thoughts. Thoughts are like atoms. If you watch them with alertness, you can see every thought is separate from another. Between two thoughts, there is an interval, a space. They are not joined together. They appear joined together because you are not very alert. It is just like if a man has a torch in his hand and moves his hand fast, round and round and round, you will feel a circle of fire. The circle doesn't exist because the torch is only at one point. at one time, then at another point in another time. The circle of fire doesn't exist, but the torch moves so fast you cannot see the gaps. You see a circle. Thoughts move fast. Their fastness creates the feeling that they are joined together. A circle is created. This is just a feeling. There are only two ways to go beyond it. One is to bring thoughts to a slow movement so they don't move too fast. Let them slow down a little. That's why I insist, don't be in a hurry, don't be tense. Move with a slow pace. Move non-tense, unhurried. Because if you are unhurried, thoughts cannot go against you, they are part of you. If you are deeply patient, thoughts cannot move faster than you. They become slower. When thoughts are slower, the torch moves slow. You can see the circle doesn't exist. It was an appearance only. When thoughts move slow, you can see that there are gaps. Thoughts are atoms, and nothing joins them together. So one way is to slow down, and another way is to become more aware. If you are more aware, you have a more penetrating vision, more penetrating insight. Work both the ways. Become more alert. Not move like a sleeping man. Don't be a somnambulist. Everybody is. You are moving in life as if asleep. You do your things, but only a part is awake. 99% you are asleep. You don't know what you are doing, why you are doing, why it is happening. You go on and on, as if hypnotized by something. It is a great hypnosis. Nobody else has hypnotized you. It is an auto-hypnosis. You have hypnotized yourself. You can do it easily. Just look in the mirror. Sit before the mirror and look in your own eyes in the mirror, and you will be hypnotized by yourself. You will fall asleep. You will fall in a coma. And the same has happened through millions of lives. Unalert, impatient, running faster and faster, and becoming a sleeper and a sleeper. You cannot see. Just become a little patient. That's why to come to the East helps. In the West, it is difficult to slow down. The whole life is moving at such a speed. You cannot slow down, otherwise you will be out of life. You will be a misfit. In the East, if you move to the villages, life moves so slowly that if you move fast, you will be a misfit. You will find yourself alone. Nobody is going with you. Life moves slowly. In the old days, when life was moving slowly on whole of the earth, to understand oneself was very easy. Because you could see easily, close your eyes and you can see vast spaces between two thoughts. Just like as physicists say, that between two atoms there is a vast space. I have heard a story about the future, that a man was traveling. He came to a station where he was trying to get down. He called many porters. Other passengers were simply wondering why he is calling, because they have not seen any luggage with him. He has only a matchbox and a packet of cigarette, that's all. And they have not seen anything with him. So why he is calling? And he called a dozen porters. And then he said, carry this matchbox. People started laughing. But in that matchbox was a complete car, compressed. Scientists say that an elephant can be compressed because in the elephant atoms are few, vast spaces are more. Just as you can compress cotton, an elephant can be compressed. And an elephant can stand in a matchbox. A whole railway train can be compressed. Space has to be taken out, then it can be put in a matchbox. And that will be very easy transportation of things. A man can also be compressed. Someday they will do it. Because if you want to travel to the Mars or to the Moon, it will be difficult to carry so many people because it will be very costly. The only way will be first compress the passengers. And when they have reached the Moon, puff them again. Because much space exists. Much space exists, not only in Susila, in everybody. Much space. It can be brought out. You can be compressed. All the stars and all the planets can be compressed in a small room if the whole space is taken out. The whole world is full of space, atoms are few. And then there is another problem. If you move into the atom, there are again spaces. Between two atoms, there is space, vast space. If you move in the atom, then there is space between electrons, vast spaces again. Now scientists have become a little scared about the whole thing. Matter has completely disappeared. Just in the beginning of this century, they were declaring that God is dead, but God is not dead. All that has happened within 50 years is that matter is dead. They chased matter hard. They chased matter from molecules to atoms, from atoms to electrons, and suddenly they are standing in a nothingness, no matter. The same has happened in the East. We never bothered about matter. We bothered about the soul, and we chased the soul from the body to the mind, from the mind to the being, and the more we chased, a moment came, everything disappeared, only nothingness. That is what I mean when I say you are a non-being, anatta. That's what Buddha says, that nothing exists within you, just an infinite nothingness. Physics has reached to the same point where metaphysics has reached before it, to nothingness. It seems nothingness is not absolutely nothing. On the contrary, now we can understand that nothingness is a state of everythingness. Non-being is a state of being, unmanifest and manifest. The same thing becomes manifest, then it is matter. When it becomes unmanifest, it is a space. The same thing when it becomes manifest is the ego. When it becomes unmanifest, it is non-being, anatta. Matter is clusters of atoms, and ego is clusters of thoughts. If you go deep into matter, matter disappears. If you go deep into thoughts, ego disappears. Then who moves? Nobody. But the movement is there. From one life to another, the movement is there. But nobody as the mover. Just a cluster of thoughts. Have you ever watched any man dying? You must have watched. Next time, if you hear that somebody is dying or somebody is dead, immediately go there and sit and just try to feel what is happening. If you watch a man dying, you will feel many things happening in you, because a dying man releases all his thoughts. Now this house is no more safe. The thoughts start leaving, as if the nest is no more safe and the words start being on the wing. This house is no more useful, dangerous to be in it. It can collapse any moment. It is going to collapse, and everybody is leaving. All thoughts on the wing. If a good man is dying, sitting nearby him, you will feel a sudden awakening of goodness within you. If a bad man is dying, you will feel suddenly an awakening of badness in you. If a very evil man is dying, you will feel that you are becoming evil. If a saint is dying, suddenly you will feel an innocence arising in you that you have never known before, because he will create the whole atmosphere around you. His thoughts moving, a cluster of thoughts, a cluster of birds moving. Soon they will ascend another womb. Somewhere a couple will be making love. All over the world, every single moment, millions of people are making love. They are the opportunities for this cluster of thoughts to enter a womb, to get into a new house. If you have understood this before your death, that thoughts are separate, they have infinite spaces within them, intervals. If while you were alive the ego was dissolved, you have come to know that there is no ego, nothing like me inside, then you will die without desire to be born again, because you know it is futile. All desires disappear when you know that there is no ego. You don't desire, you simply die. Without the gluing force of desire, thoughts are released, but they can't make a cluster. The gluing force is desire. It glues every thought to another and makes a whole of them. If desire is not there, thoughts will disappear. They will move into the infinite sky, but not as a cluster, as separate atoms. And you have disappeared completely. This disappearance is nirvana. But one has to know before death. One has to die before death. The whole art of religion is how to die. But then how to live is implied, because you can die rightly only if you have lived rightly. And when I say rightly, I don't mean a good life. When I say rightly, I mean a meditative life. I don't mean a moral life when I say right life. I mean a very, very understanding life, aware, alert. difficult unless you come within yourself to know that there exists nobody. It will not be possible for you to understand that how without anybody there, and you have been passing through many lives. Have you ever seen a fire catching a town? Have you seen that from one house the fire jumps to another house? How it jumps from one house to another house? Just through the wind. If the wind is not there, it cannot jump to another house. Just a flame, without any fuel, just a flame jumps from one house to another. Only wind is needed. Flowing wind is needed. On the wings of the wind, the flame is absolutely non-material. Within a second, it will be no more there. It jumps and catches another house, and the whole house is burnt. In the same way, whatsoever you call your soul is nothing but a flame of desire. When one man dies, the desire to be born again, the desire not to die, is the wind and the cluster of thoughts on the wings of this wind of desire jump into another womb, another house. If you have understood it while alive, then there is no wind to take you anywhere. The desire is no more there. Thoughts will disappear into existence as individual atoms. You will not be born. Then you are one with existence. Then there is no need to be separate again and again, and no need to suffer again and again, because separation is suffering. The fourth question: it has been said that a disciple should have respectful manners and a respectful attitude towards his master, but often I feel like asking you playful, joking and naughty questions. Does this indicate lack of respect and shraddha, trust? It does not depend on the question. It depends on the questioner. The question is irrelevant. You can ask a playful, joking, a naughty question with deep respect. There is no problem about it. In fact, without deep respect, how can you ask such a question? You love the master, and you love him so deeply, and you respect him, and you respect him so deeply, then you are free to ask anything. It depends on the questioner, not on the question. If the questioner is in deep love and trust the master, then everything is allowed. He can ask any sort of question. But if the trust doesn't exist in the questioner, you can ask a very serious and respectful question. But that is just formal respect. Deep down, there is no respect. Try to understand this. The quality of the questioning heart. If there is trust, then whatsoever you ask is good. If there is no trust, then whatsoever you ask is no good. You can ask anything you feel like asking. Just try to see within yourself before you ask that why you are asking this. If there is trust, trust makes everything holy. And in the East, trust has been such a deep-rooted phenomenon. The disciples have asked such questions that in the West you cannot even imagine. Nobody can imagine asking such questions about Jesus as people in the East have asked about Buddha. A Zen master, Mumon, asked his master that, "What do you say about Buddha nature in a dog? Is a dog also a Buddha? Is there any possibility of a dog being a Buddha ever?" And what the master did, you know? He started walking on the force and he barked. And this was his answer. Yes, a dog is also Buddha. The possibility is there, always, however far away from Buddha, but someday he will also reach the goal. You can ask any question. Always find out before you ask it from where it comes. From your love, trust, then everything is good. You may be simply formal, serious, asking your question in a very soft and gentlemanly way. But if the heart is not there, it is dead. In fact, that is disrespect. Sixth question, can you tell me about acceptance and how to learn to accept? Because I feel a part in me that doesn't want to accept. I would like to know who is that part of me that is so stupid. Is there a way to make that part of me more clear to myself? The first thing is to understand what acceptance means. You say, can you tell me about acceptance and how to learn to accept? Because I feel a part in me that doesn't want to accept. Accept that part also. Otherwise, you have not understood. A part in you goes on rejecting. Accept that rejecting part also. Otherwise, you have not understood. Don't try to reject that part. Accept it. That is what total acceptance is. You have to accept that also which rejects. And you say, I would like to know who is that part of me that is so stupid. The moment you call it stupid, you have rejected. Why you call it stupid? Who are you to call it stupid? It is your part. Why you are dividing yourself into two? You are a whole. All these tricks that you have learned of division have to be dropped. You have learned to divide yourself in the godly part and the devilish part, the good and the bad, the high and the low. Drop all divisions. That is what acceptance means. If you have something, you have something. Why call it stupid? And who are you to call it stupid? No, in the very calling it stupid, you have rejected it, you have condemned it. Acceptance means that there is no question of condemnation. Whatsoever is the case, you accept it. And suddenly there comes a transformation in your being. Don't call it stupid. Don't call names. Don't divide yourself. Because this is how the ego exists. It is ego which is saying the other part is stupid. The ego is always intelligent, understanding, great, and it goes on rejecting. The ego teaches you to reject the body, because body is material and you are spiritual. The ego teaches you to reject this and that. All this has been done for centuries. Religious people have been doing this continuously, and they have not reached anywhere. In fact, they have made the whole humanity schizophrenic. They have divided everybody completely into parts. You have compartments within you. This is good and that is bad. Love is good and hate is bad. Compassion is good and anger is bad. When I say accept all. Drop all these compartments. You become one. Everything is good. Anger also has its part to play. And hate is also needed. In fact, whatsoever you have got, everything is needed. Maybe in a different arrangement, that's all. But nothing is to be denied, rejected. Don't call anything stupid in yourself. And then you ask, is there a way to make that part of me more clear to myself? Why? Can't you accept something hidden within you? Can't you accept something dark within you? You are also lying day and night. Something is in the light, something is in the dark. It has to be so. Otherwise, you will be just on the surface. You will not have any depth. The depth has to be in darkness. If a tree says that I would like to bring my roots to my knowledge, then the tree will die. Because roots can exist only in deep darkness, hidden in the earth. There is no need to bring them up. If you bring them up, the tree will be dead. You need a dark part as much as you need a light part. But religious people have been doing dangerous things. They have taught you that God is light. I tell you, God is both light and darkness. Because a God who is simply light will not be very rich. He will be a tree without roots. He will be only a porch, not the interior of a house. A house needs the porch also, and a house needs the interior also. A house needs both places hidden completely, because your deepest part lives there. So understanding doesn't mean that you bring everything in light. Understanding means that you become so understanding that you allow everything to be as it is. Understanding is not an effort to change anything. No. Understanding is understanding of the whole as it is. And through that understanding, as things are, there is transformation. There is revolution. There is mutation. You change completely. Once you understand that everything has its reason You don't bother to interfere with nature. You start floating with it. You don't push the river. You simply float with it. That is what Tao is. The whole teaching of Lao says that there is not a single need to do anything on your part. Everything is already done for you. You simply accept it and float. Let things be as they are. Don't make any effort for any change whatsoever. Because the very effort to change brings tension in the mind. Very effort to change brings future in the mind. The very effort to change is a denial of God. Because then you say, we are wiser than you. We are trying to improve upon you. No need. Just be in a deep let go and float. It will be difficult because the ego will say, what are you doing? In this way you will never reach anywhere. But where do you want to reach? You are already there. The ego will say, in this way you will never grow. But what is the point of growing? Every moment is perfect. Where do you want to go and grow? And what? And for what? The ego goes on pushing you into the future, into desire. Do this, do that. It never allows you to rest a little. And the whole Tao, the attitude, the vision of Tao is to relax and enjoy. And through enjoyment, things start settling by their own, on their own. If the whole existence goes on living in such a beautiful way, why only this man is in trouble? Because no dog is trying to become anything else. No rose is trying to become lotus. No lotus is trying to become anything else. Everything is as it is. Content. Celebrating. Only man is mad. He wants to become something. He wants to prove something. Can't you see the celebration that goes on silently all around? Only you are not part of it. Because you can think. Thinking brings the division. Don't say to any of your part, stupid. You are calling names to God. Don't condemn, because every condemnation is the condemnation of God. You have come out of the hole. The hole knows better than you. Allow the wisdom of the whole to work. You don't bring your tiny mind to fight. No need to go upstream. And you will not reach anywhere, you will simply be tired. Don't fight. Allow things. That's what acceptance is. It is let go. You live as if you are completely retired. You live, you do, but you do things naturally, spontaneously. They happen. You feel like doing, you do. You don't feel like doing, you don't do. You by and by fall into line with the nature. You become more and more natural. The more natural, the more religious. Gurdjieff used to say a very beautiful thing. He used to say that up to now, all religions have been against God. I can see what he means. That has been the misery. Our religions have been against God. They have been puffing your egos, making you superior, higher, Superman, spiritual, all nonsense. You have to be just ordinary and enjoy. To be ordinary is the most extraordinary thing that can happen to you. But the desire to be extraordinary, to be spiritual, Superman, not of this world but of the other world, is a mania. Natural religion is only Tao. All other religions are in subtle ways unnatural. Lao Tse is the future of whole humanity. And all possibilities of bliss and benediction lie through him, pass through him. Why can't you just be? Try for a few days, just be. Once you have the taste, it will not be difficult. Once a small window opens of being, then you will laugh about the whole effort you have been always doing. Just be is the message. Sixth question. The only questions I have remaining are ones part of me would like to suppress. For example, I have been told that you leave your body for several hours each day, and that when you return you are very hungry, and that you eat 16 chapatis. Is this true? Yes, it is true. Whenever one leaves the body, coming back, one feels very, very hungry. And after entering the body again, food functions as a paperweight. And it helps the inner space to settle in the body again easily. Someday you will feel it, and someday it will happen suddenly in your meditations that you are standing outside the body and watching your own body lying there. Don't get afraid. And don't be afraid that how now you will enter into it. Just the idea of entering, and you will find in it. Just the very idea, no effort is needed, just that I would like to enter, and you will enter. The very desire will lead you in. But then you will feel a very unnatural hunger, as if you have not eaten for many days. The body has lost much physical energy while you are out of it. There is a point beyond which you cannot be out of it, otherwise the body will be dead. To a certain limit you can be out of it, but in that time, in that interval, the body is losing energy continuously, very fast, because you are not in it. To hold that energy, the body is almost dead. When you enter into it, you will feel as if for many days you have not eaten. So that's true. But about the exact number, you will have to ask Vivek. 16 are not that I cannot be the right authority about. The eighth question, whenever a certain feeling of opening comes and a certain peace, always a strong anxiety and depression follow and make me very tired. It seems to be a vicious circle. What is the attitude to take? It always happens. It is natural, not vicious. Whenever you are happy, very happy, a peak, suddenly the valley will follow. There are always valleys with peaks. You cannot be on the peak forever. You will fall into the valley in a deep depression. If you are feeling very, very energetic, soon a tiredness will settle in. The opposite is always by the corner. It has to be so, because the opposite is not the opposite, it is the complementary. If you are happy continuously for a long time, that will be too much excitement. It will be moving to the extreme, and that can be dangerous to life. You have to be thrown back into sadness. Sadness is relaxing. It is not an excitement. It is like night following day. Tired, you fall asleep. It is not vicious, it is natural, and nature has its own economy. So what to do? Don't disturb the circle. Only thing that you have to do is, when you are high, don't get identified with that highness. When you feel very, very happy, remember always that it is only a mood, not you. A climate surrounding you, but not you. It is raining, but you don't think that you are the rain. Then the rains have stopped. Now the sun has come out, it is very sunny. You don't think that you are the sun, are the sunniness. It is something happening around you. At the same inside, remember. Happiness, it is just like rains are the sunniness. A climate, a mood around you. An environment, but not you. You are the watcher. You are the witness who knows that now everything is so beautiful. If you are the watcher, you will always remember that sooner or later the other opposite will follow. You are already ready for it. If you are ready for it, it will not be so depressing. The height will not be such excitement, then the sadness will not be so sad. And by and by, the peak and the valley will start coming nearer and nearer and nearer, and a moment comes, the peak disappears, the valley disappears, you are on plain ground. That plain ground is neither happiness nor unhappiness. We have given it a different name, we call it bliss, anand. It is not happiness. A man of bliss is not happy in the ordinary sense, because he is not excited at all. He is absolutely calm and quiet, without any excitement. It is not sadness also, because a man of bliss is silent, but not sad. In a man of bliss, sadness and happiness have met. They have come to a harmony. all that is beautiful in sadness, and remember, there is much that is beautiful in sadness, and all that is beautiful in happiness is there together, and all that is bad in happiness, there is much that is bad, and all that is bad in happiness, of course you know, that is much is bad there, both are gone. What is good in happiness? The feeling of euphoria. What is bad in happiness? The excitement. Because every excitement is tiring. Excitement is a dissipation of energy. Excitement is fever. Excitement is feverous. It is the ill state of affairs. That feverishness will not be there in the man of bliss. He will be happy, but not feverish. There will be no excitement. You will not be even able to see whether he is happy or not. If you come across a Buddha, you will not be able to feel whether he is happy or not. He is so unexcitedly happy that on the surface nothing shows. He is so deeply happy that on the surface nothing shows. His happiness is not the happiness of a storm, excitement, fever. His happiness is of a silent lake. In sadness, the bad thing is that you feel dull, that you feel heavy. In a man of bliss, there is no dullness. He is weightless. He is not heavy at all. He does not walk on the earth, in fact. He flies. He has wings. He has no weight. Gravitation doesn't affect him, in fact. He is like a feather. And what is good in sadness? The depth. Sadness is very deep. No laughter can be as deep as sadness. No laughter can be as deep as sadness. Laughter is always superficial, a little profane, a little vulgar. Sadness has a sobriety of its own. Sadness has a depth of its own. Sadness has a deep feeling, the feeling of the valley, very deep, penetrating. It has something sacred about it, holy about it. A man of bliss is in that depth, in that holiness, that sacredness. He is both and both not. He transcends both, and he is a harmony of both. A man of bliss is a miracle, a rare combination of opposites, a rare synthesis of opposites. So don't think that this is vicious, this is natural. All that you have to do is remember that you are separate. When happy, know that happiness is around you, bubbling everywhere. The laughter all around, shaking you to your very roots. But remain alert. Don't get identified with the mood. Don't become the mood. Remain a watcher. And the watcher always knows the other is falling, coming, following. Soon you will see the days disappearing and the night is coming. Remain a watcher. When you have become sad, again go on watching. As the day has passed, the night will also pass. Everything passes. After few alert moments, you will remember that you are completely separate. You are neither this nor that. This is how for the first time you will feel blissful. Now you know unhappiness cannot disturb you. Happiness cannot disturb you. You have attained to an unperturbable state, the state of bliss. That is the goal of all Buddhas. Enough for today.